a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
And welcome. So great to have you with us today on this Father's Day weekend, 2014. If you are a dad, let me just wish you happy Father's Day in advance. I'm hoping that your kids serve you breakfast in bed. No, better yet, I'm hoping that your kids clean the garage, mow the lawn. If you have an older car, maybe tune it up for you. I guess it would depend on their age and their skill level. But, you know, you can always put in your requests. Never hurts, right, Dad? Whatever you do, Mom, do not buy Dad a tie this weekend. There was a survey, and they asked dads what do they want or not want for Father's Day. And one of the top things on the list was a homemade gift from their child, which, of course, I would love for my kids. And the bottom of the list, a tie. Only 2% of men said they would like a tie from their family. I guess you could get them a really creative, wacky one. But, yeah, lay off the tie purchases this year, Mom, please. I found something interesting I wanted to share with you. The National Center for Fathering in Kansas City comes out with a essay contest every year. They ask about 100,000 school kids around the country submit their essays on what my father means to me. And then they pick the winners, and they publish them on their website. And I happen to know Carrie Casey, who is the CEO of the National Center for Fathering, had a chance to interview him a few years ago on Focus on the Family. Wonderful guy. And I wanted to read a few of the winning essays to you. They pick an essay for every grade level. And Lexi, who was in the first grade, wrote this essay for her dad. She says, "My daddy means everything to me. He jumps on the trampoline with me. He goes roller skating with my school and holds my hand and all my friends' hands at the same time. My daddy lets me paint his toenails different colors and doesn't get mad when I don't paint them well. He drives the SWAT truck to my school so all the kids can look inside it." Sounds like he's a police officer. "He also makes the best omelets ever. Best of all, my daddy hugs and giggles with me when he puts me to bed at night. I wish my daddy didn't have to work so he could stay home with me." Wow, Lexi, that is beautiful. And Lexi's dad, kudos to you for all those wonderful things you do for your daughter. Jack, who is in the second grade, wrote this one. "My dad is in the military just like his dad was. He was deployed for 6 months. I missed him so much. I'm glad he's home now. He's very funny, and he's always there for me when I need him. My dad is very good at hockey. He also knows how to fix things and put together Legos. I admire him for his bravery, and he is religious. He is good to our family, and that makes him a good father. I am so happy he's my dad." And Jack, we're happy he's your dad, too. Now, I found one for a grandpa. Let me grab this one here. Sorry, I had to reach over to my little stack and get my essay for grandpa. This, you may know this, that there are millions of grandfathers around the country who are raising their grandkids as their own children. And I'm not sure if that's the case with this particular grandpa, but Elena wrote this one to her grandpa, and she says, she's in third grade, by the way, "My grandpa is courageous, loyal, and gentle. He's also kind because one time he went shopping with me and bought me lots of things. He also gave me lots of rides on his Bobcat. Some godly qualities he has are he is content, humble, diligent, honest, faithful, and loving. Things we have in common are going ice fishing, building a fort, and planting a garden. Some fun things we do together are going out to eat, playing stickball, and laughing. What I want to do in the future for my grandpa is to have him walk me down my aisle at the wedding." Wow, that's beautiful. Well, Elena, thank you for that, and thanks to all the kids. If you want to check out some of their essays, you can go to the National Center for Fathering's website and read a few of them. And again, if you're a dad, happy Father's Day in advance from all of us here at Faith Radio. As you may know, each week, one of the things I love to do is take a peek at some of the research on health and family and faith, culture. And this particular research study, I don't know where it fits, but I just thought it was fun. So I wanted to share it with you. And here's a question as we start this off. Are you a dog person or a cat person? Did you know that your preference in pets could have a lot to say about your personality? So, Dad, are you a dog person or cat person? New study has found significant differences between dog lovers and cat lovers. People who said they were dog people tended to be more energetic and outgoing. They also tended to follow rules closely. Cat people, on the other hand, were more introverted, more open-minded, and more sensitive than the dog people. Cat people also tended to be nonconformists, and they were more likely to rebel against the rules. Does that surprise you? Cats like to rebel against rules. Now, here is something that will definitely spark rivalries among pet owners. Cat lovers scored higher on intelligence than dog lovers. I'm serious. Denise Costello, who's a professor of psychology at Carroll University in Wisconsin, says part of the reason for the personality differences may be related to the types of environments that cat or dog people prefer. She says it makes sense that a dog person is going to be more lively because they're going to want to be out there outside talking to people, bringing their dog along. If you're more introverted and sensitive, maybe you're at home reading a book and your cat doesn't need to go outside for a walk. By the way, dog lovers found companionship to be the most attractive quality in their pets, while cat people liked affection from their cats. Dr. Costello says it's possible that people may select their pets based on their own personality. For example, cats are often seen as independent animals that keep to themselves and are cautious of others. So maybe if that's sort of your personality traits, characteristics, maybe you're a cat lover. Now, I should share with you that I have a Labradoodle puppy at home. So going with that research, I tend to be playful. And I like to chew on furniture. Thanks to my dog, Sparky, for teaching me those things. Well, it's 11 minutes past the hour. I'm Bill Meyer, and this is the Faith Radio Network. Coming up, we're going to be talking about Christian singles on this Father's Day weekend, and maybe to spend a little bit of time talking about how a father impacts the self-concept of his daughter and maybe her choice in dating partners. Wow. My guest, Lisa Anderson from Focus on the Family, joins us next here on the Faith Radio Network.
Should not surprise us. It showed that children are far more likely to get good grades in school and are less likely to fail or be expelled if their fathers are highly involved in their schoolwork. This is true even if they don't live with their kids. This study, based on interviews with parents and guardians of almost 17,000 children, found that in two-parent households where both the mother and father were highly involved, 51% of their children got mostly A's. Where only the father participated, 48% got mostly A's. And when only the mother was involved, 44% got mostly A's. When neither parent showed an interest, only 27% of the children did well in school. The investigation revealed the critical nature of participation by both parents, but especially fathers, in the educational setting. When this involvement does not occur, the child's chances of achieving academically are dramatically reduced. But when mothers and fathers are distracted and overcommitted or strung out on drugs or alcohol, it's the young and the vulnerable among us who suffer the most. The truth of the matter is that children can't raise themselves. They require enormous amounts of time, energy, patience, and care. So moms and dads, you're needed at home and at school.
You can find more Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson at MyFamilyTalk.com. That's MyFamilyTalk.com.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
And you can join the conversation by calling us at 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. You can also get in touch through our website, myfaithradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Well, my guest today is Lisa Anderson. She's the director of Young Adults for Focus on the Family, the world's leading Christian organization dedicated to helping families thrive. Lisa manages Boundless, which is Focus's ministry for young adults. And what they do at Boundless is they try to help 20 and 30-somethings grow up, own their own Christian faith, date with purpose, and prepare for marriage and family. Wonderful goals. She also hosts a popular weekly podcast, The Boundless Show, where she leads discussions on a variety of issues. She interviews authors and music artists and newsmakers and does Q&A with the audience. And as she says, volunteers far too much information from her personal life. One of the things that Lisa loves to do, well, several. She loves to travel and run and hike. And she loves Jesus, people, ideas, and guacamole in that order. Lisa, welcome back to Faith Radio.
Hey, Bill. Great to be here. I do have to say sometimes guacamole trumps a few of the others, but usually I try to keep it in that order.
That's good to hear. Now, we had you on the broadcast back in the spring talking about Christian singles, and we really only scratched the surface. And I thought it was such an important topic because there are so many Christians who are delaying marriage. And we're going to get into the age of marriage and how that's impacting Christian singles in a minute. But because it's Father's Day weekend, I thought we could start off, and you can share what you know from the Focus research, but also in your own experience talking to young women. How does a father's relationship with his daughter impact her self-concept and even her choice in dating partners?
Yeah, and I think this is something, Bill, that we haven't even looked at extensively enough until probably pretty recently, as fatherhood research has become more prominent, has come to the forefront in a lot of different sociological circles. So what I've seen, though, is that, first of all, men and women who are single, especially in the Gen X and millennial generations, first of all, we're the product of the largest divorce generation in history, the boomers. So many who are my age and younger have grown up either without dads or with very absent dads in, you know, as far as the picture, practically speaking, in their own lives. How this has impacted women is it tends to be men have taken on, you know, we've seen in the from the 50s on, you know, there was this traditional role of father as provider, and I think men did that. Well, then fathers kind of transitioned over to the other side where they were trying to make up for lost time with their daughters or lost contact, and so it became probably a much more permissive kind of relationship. And I think a lot of fathers, and what we're seeing, especially now with the 20-somethings, is it was kind of an anything goes, and fathers were trying to be their daughter's friends rather than truly being their fathers. And so we see a lot of girls who are feeling a little bit at sea when it comes to making decisions. They felt that they didn't get a good construct for what it means with their own identity, what it means to be loved, what it means to be, you know, what's inherently good about them, and which is why we've seen in relationships that translate into a lot of poor decisions looking for all that affirmation.
You know, it's interesting that you mention this whole thing of being your daughter's buddy, which is a relatively recent phenomenon in our culture. And I remember an interview with Billy Ray Cyrus, the dad of Miley Cyrus. And, of course, we've seen Miley really kind of implode over the last few years, you know, from the squeaky clean Hannah Montana to, you know, her persona today. And Billy Ray said, and this was, I think, maybe 3 years ago when Miley first started to really self-destruct, and he was asked about their relationship, and he said, one of the things I really regret is that I thought my role was to be her friend, her buddy, and not to really discipline her and not to tell her what she should do, right from wrong, but just be her pal. And And you can see the result. We can't blame, you know, Billy Ray's parenting for all the choices that she's made. But certainly, I think that's a very insightful statement about how a dad's either, you know, structure or lack of structure with his daughter impacts her choices.
Yeah, and it obviously translates into the dating structure, because what I see from a lot of young adults is them saying, my dad is completely hands off. I mean, they're, you know, we'll see dads that are just like, oh my goodness, well, I'm not going to butt into your love life, or I'm not going to worry about this guy, or you just let me know what you want me to do, you know, basically asking to be dictated to as to their role in their daughter's, you know, relationships. And the girls are like, okay, well, you know, and as a result, we see so many girls who are just using their own devices. I mean, they're going online, they're going to these random singles mixers in large cities, they're dating guys without really any kind of protection or covering. And because of the dads that either aren't there or the ones who have just stepped back and have become very passive in their role, that's why we're having to make calls, you know, to the church at large to say, men in the church, please step up. And on behalf of fathers, you know, come in and fulfill this role for women, because, you know, left to their own devices, women, I've been in this situation myself. And here I was very arrogant, thinking that I would make wise choices on my own. And I wasn't, you know, thinking, oh, we can do it ourselves. Don't worry. I have a lot of sense. I know a good guy when I see it. And no, that role of a man, a guy who knows a man's mind, is absolutely necessary.
Now, what about the father, the absent father, the father that the girl who's never known the dad because, let's say, out of wedlock, childbearing, divorce, where the dad unfortunately leaves the picture entirely? How does that impact her? Now, I'm going to say, as a psychologist, this is just a general statement, and it's nothing new, but it seems to me that these young women, because they crave so much a father's love and affection, that they really make the wrong choices. They, rather than going for a guy who could provide them with the love and the tenderness and the affection and the faithfulness that they really need, they tend to go for guys who are just the opposite. They're dangerous, and they will ultimately treat them badly and dump them. And it's almost like they want somehow to subconsciously repeat what happened to them as a young girl. Have you seen that as well?
Yeah, because what girls will do is they want desperately to be needed, they want to fit in, and they want to have a place. And their dad did not give them that place. He didn't give them that protection and that security. So they're going to step in, and they're going to find the guy that they can rescue, the guy that can make them indispensable. And so they're going to get in a relationship, and it's this skewed version of even, you know, Bill, I hate to call it out, but even Pride and Prejudice, the single woman's manifesto of all relationships. Mr. Darcy is that brooding guy that's just misunderstood, and why is he so proud, and why is he, you know, but Elizabeth Bennet has to go in there and figure out what all this stuff is from his past, you know, that made him so unwilling to, you know, break out of his shell and consider other folks. And so that is a, you know, obviously the Jane Austen version. Now we have the ridiculously, you know, twisted versions of that. But it all gets back to this, a girl wanting to be singled out for who she is and recognize that she is special, and she will go to any lengths she needs to get that.
And so many young women making the wrong decisions today, and there's so much pain. I know you've interacted with a lot of single women, both through Boundless and perhaps at the Focus Institute, and I'm guessing that you have heard just a lot of painful horror stories about, first of all, what's happened to women growing up with their relationship with their dad, and then some of the decisions that they've made as teens or young adults that have just scarred them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I am absolutely flabbergasted, Bill, at the types of questions we get in. You know, we have our weekly show. We answer a question every week on our show. We also have an advice column each week at Boundless. And the questions that we use there are ones that we actually receive from readers and listeners. And they are so specific and so full of pain, and so they're just extremely driven by, this is my situation, this is a feeling of being stuck, you know, in a sense. And like I said, a lot of women, especially, who are saying, I didn't think it would turn out like this. I thought that I would have a better story than this. I thought I knew what I was doing and I wouldn't make bad decisions. And they just trace it back and they realize they hadn't received any great examples growing up. They had no guidance. They had no understanding. Even, you know, one of my own friends, Bill, grew up the oldest of the kids in her family, and her dad, you know, beginning in junior high and on, was cheating on her mom, abandoned the family, never would say that he loved her, very exacting in his requirements of her, wanted her to be perfect. And she's kind of taken the opposite. I mean, she's just kind of backed off and felt fearful of any relationship, in the sense of she doesn't even know how to do one well, or how to even trust men, or how to. And so I think it's just bearing out in so many different areas, you know, with women who are fearful or they're running headlong in the wrong direction.
So on this Father's Day weekend, and just speak from your heart here, if you were talking to the dads listening who have little girls or girls in junior high or high school still in the home, what would you say to them? What are their daughters need most from them, Lisa?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, dads, that your daughters need to know that they belong in your family, that they belong in your heart, that they have a special place in your heart, that you are concerned about their welfare, that you are very determined, that you feel that you're calling to be their protector and their provider. I mean, it's unfortunate that we're now in a culture where you know, girls grow up too fast and girls are leaving the nest and girls are severing their relationships with their dads. But if we truly ideally could have that dad in a protective role, and it changes, you know, but well into our 20s as girls are launching into adulthood, to just know that there's that safety net. I think that's first and foremost. And then to just spend time with your daughter. I always say, you know, for both men and women, I tell moms and dads, you know, if your son or daughter is 5 years old and you haven't started casting a vision to them for what a right relationship is, how men should treat women, how women should honor marriage and honor, you know, relationships, and how they should trust God and everything for their story, then you're not doing it soon enough. All of that happens. You know, I think I see so many young adults who feel like, well, now I'm 24, so I guess I better learn how to, you know, be in a relationship or learn how to communicate with people or how to do conflict. And that's the worst time to start, you know. So I would say, dads, know that your role is so critical, and especially, you know, hang in there through those preteen and teen years. You're going to be completely dissed. I did it to my dad. Stay encouraged. You do matter. You're being watched. You're being listened to. And just know that that your role is so important.
Hmm. It's interesting. You talked about, you know, dissing your dad as a teenager. And so many girls do. They go through that adolescent rebellion, girls and boys. But all the research would say that even during those years, the kids look to their parents as their primary role model. And they really want their parents' input. And they really want their parents' advice, even though it may seem like they're pushing them away. And, of course, the way that parents deliver that advice is key. One of the things that Focus on the Family helps parents do is to navigate those different stages of development and make sure that the message that they want to, you know, impart to their son or daughter is received and not rejected. Boy, there's some fantastic parenting resources on the Focus website. And certainly for this Father's Day weekend, we want to recommend that dads go there. If you are a dad, especially if you're a dad who maybe did not have a positive father figure in your own life, didn't really realize how it was supposed to be done, and maybe you have young children and you're kind of floundering, Focus on the Family can help. And Lisa, boy, I mean, talk about great resources. Jim Daly's own weekly blog, just some fantastic stuff there from Focus.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, Bill, I mean, I fought with my dad through all of junior high and high school over the dumbest things, but he's now gone. And as I look back, I realize the stuff that I never knew I was even learning from him and how important it was.
Mm. Our guest is Lisa Anderson. She is the director of young adults for Focus on the Family and also manages Boundless, Focus's ministry for young adults. You can find out more about them at boundless.org. Now, we are going to get into the topic of Christian singles, dating, and marriage up next. If you know someone who is a single Christian in their 20s, 30s, 40s, even 50s, because they're out there. Tell them to tune in to Faith Radio for the next 30 minutes or so. We'll be back after this quick break.
Living by faith through life's ups and downs. Here's Pastor. The conversation continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
Well, how are Christian singles faring in the year 2014? What's the dating landscape look like, marriage landscape, for those who call themselves followers of Jesus Christ but are not yet married? Things have changed a lot in the last, even the last 30 years when it comes to singleness and dating. And unfortunately, for many single Christians, they are not necessarily following what the Bible teaches about relationships and sexual purity. They're kind of going with what the world tells them. And it's a big concern to many folks, including those that focus on the family. Our guest is Lisa Anderson. She's the director of Young Adults for Focus, and she also manages Boundless, which is their ministry for young adults. And Lisa, first of all, Annette, we talked about this back in the spring when you were on the program. Let's talk about the age of marriage and how that's been increasing, the age of first marriage in America, where it's at currently, and how that really affects both men and women.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, where we saw in the late 60s the average age of marriage being about 20 to 21 for women and about 23 to 24 for men, that's now gone up to about 26 and 28 for men and women, respectively. And it may seem, I mean, for some people, they're like, oh, well, thank goodness, you know, it's still in the 20s, so that's good. But when you look at the overarching population, you see that that really is protracting singleness. Those numbers are also representative of the church. The church does not have much lower numbers. And what's fascinating to me and what we've seen at Boundless is how much of this is not, I mean, sure, there's a lot of it that's single young adults deciding to continue education or wanting to use their 20s as this prolonged adolescence. But a lot of it, Bill, is brought on by the parents and influencers of young adults telling their kids, don't get married yet because you're not ready, and really enabling kind of an immaturity that is keeping young adults from getting married and moving towards those benchmarks of responsibility.
Now, that's interesting. I that's one area I hadn't thought of, that the parents basically saying, okay, honey, you're only 28. You're not ready for marriage yet.
they're terrified, Bill. They're terrified for their kids, thinking that they're not going to make it out on their own because they don't think their kids are grown up enough to commit to marriage.
Which really is an indictment of that, the whole child-centered parenting philosophy that has, you know, run rampant in our culture over the last 20 years in particular, where it's all about the child's happiness and there's very little emphasis on helping the child prepare for the real world. And now we have these young adults in the real world who are kind of clueless. And we talked about this back in the spring when you were on the broadcast, that, you know, and I hate to focus on guys here, but I will, because I'm one of them. But there are just a lot of men, young men in their late 20s, 30s, even 40s, that are still living kind of like teenagers. You know, they're living in their little studio apartment. They're playing video games well into the evening. They're not dating anybody seriously. They're maybe not even really, you know, successful in their career. They're kind of going from job to job, and maybe they even have a college education, but they're not using their gifts. They don't have focus. A big part of that, we have to admit, is due to the lack of, I think, fathering in our culture. And we talked about that earlier, but there's also just these cultural mores, these cultural norms, and we see it in the media. And I think so many of our young people are just thinking, well, you know, I'll grow up when I'm 50 or 60 or whatever it is. And mm-hmm. that's really, I mean, what's that going to do to our society, Lisa? What is Focus on the Family? Are you guys fearful there that, you know, where are we going as a society?
Well, it is problematic because what we're seeing is we're seeing women far outpacing men in both education and in the workplace, in college entrance, in college performance, and then in actually being able to secure a job. Now, millennials are kind of set up, they've got a lot of challenges because, Bill, the job market now was created and has trended from Gen X, which was a very small population. In contrast, the millennials are a huge population, and there are literally not enough jobs for the millennials out there. So what millennials have to realize is they're going to have to start creating their own jobs, okay? But they don't want to because they've grown up so entitled in these homes with parents that were giving them trophies for everything that they're just kind of thinking, I'm going to get out of college with my bachelor's degree, and I'm going to become a consultant and just do something amazing and pull six figures out of the gate. And it's just this complete disconnect of what is actually necessary. And so instead of saying, wow, this is harder than I thought, getting that wake-up call and be motivated to say, okay, I need to do something differently, they're just throwing up their hands, giving up and saying, okay, well, I'll just go and move back with mom and dad and see what happens and, you know, maybe get some extra degrees. I mean, now the number of millennials with MBAs, with advanced degrees, with the what I consider to just be the cursed, you know, PhD in art history. I mean, it's just nutty. It's just nuts what people are dropping hundreds of thousands of dollars for to, you know, turn out basically degrees that aren't going to get them anywhere. And it's just they're not receiving good counsel in that direction. And so both women and men are frustrated on their side of the aisle.
Do we have any hard data on the number of those millennials that are actually living at home with mom and dad? Or I'm guessing that data would be kind of hard to find, but in your experience at least, are you talking to a lot of them that have, you know, floundered and been unable to make it in the job market, so they've had to move back home?
Yeah, definitely. And I would say, in fact, I think there's a statistic that the average millennial in their 20s will hold between 5 to 7 jobs. And that's not even counting those initial, and that's not counting jobs while you're in college, like working part-time at a Starbucks or whatever. But once they have started on their career, that amount of job hopping. And then I think I saw at one point almost a 40% rate, a little bit more even, of young adults who will at some point move back in with their parents during their 20s because of job loss or underemployment or not able to find employment initially. So the numbers are huge, and it's becoming a common solution, and it's working at odds with this whole goal that we have of, you know, growing up young adults and moving them along and making it possible, you know, for them to build families and marriages.
40%. That is a shocking figure. And these are, our country's future movers and shakers and leaders, and are they going to be? Are they going to step up? Obviously, there is a subset of young people that are bucking the trend, and I know that encourages you and encourages the folks at Focus on the Family when you meet these young people that are responsible, that are realistic, that don't have this pie in the sky notion that a PhD in art history is going to make them, you know, wealthy. But those, I'm guessing, those tend to be kind of the exception rather than the rule.
They are. They're very much the exception, and that's why we at Boundless are really trying to cast that vision early on, beginning with even the high school student and the college student, to say the choices that you make now really will have an impact on where you are in your 30s and 40s. And there are so many choices. I mean, it's kind of seems seems a little bit at odds to think that some of the most important choices of your life you're going to have to make in your early to mid 20s. I mean, these poor young adults, related to education, related to advanced education, related to career, related to marriage. And so it is not the time to coast. It is not the time to say, oh, I'm going to use my 20s to, you know, be a part-time snowboard instructor or backpack across Europe or work 3 different random jobs so I can hang out with my buddies. I mean, it's just not the way to go. And so we need to start casting that vision in a more concrete, just a better way.
All right, let's talk about singleness and dating, because obviously this delaying of marriage, this delaying of responsibility, this delaying of growing up is impacting that as well. We touched on this a bit back in the spring when you were on the program, but dating is very different today than it was even, you know, when I was a young person in my 20s. In fact, it's not even really dating anymore, is it?
No, it's not. In fact, Bill, I have spoken on college campuses where I can't even get the kids to give me a definition of dating. They don't understand what it is anymore because we're in such a hookup culture that to actually move forward intentionally in a relationship, to take responsibility for it, to ask a girl out and establish that kind of definition to a relationship is almost unheard of. And so, and again, I'm saying, I mean, that the opposite of that, maybe what you would see on a Christian campus is just no one is dating at all because they're just moving around in these friend groups and, you know, everyone's just, quote, hanging out and there's nothing defined. And, you know, then we have students that are leaving college, you know, kind of my experience, like I paid for a 4-year Christian college degree and, you know, thought for sure I'd be married out of that and wasn't. So, hey, did I get my money's worth? I'm not sure. So these, you know, especially women are frustrated. They're like, oh, you know, I thought this is where I was going to meet my amazing husband. And now I'm in the workforce and I don't know what to do about it. So just no intention, no direction, no framework for how to get there. It's becoming problematic.
Hmm. What about the choices that Christian singles are making regarding sexuality? You talked about the hookup culture. That's in the general, in the world. Obviously, there are, you know, the vast majority of non-Christians. And again, there are exceptions, but the vast majority probably, you know, commitment doesn't really play into sexuality anymore. It's pretty much just everybody's out for his own, for pleasure, for, you know, friends with benefits. How much has that influenced Christian singles? And I don't know if there's any hard data on this. It's probably mostly anecdotal. But when you look at when you talk to your boundless audience and you hear from people at Focus who are Christian singles, do they understand that there are biblical guidelines for sexual purity, or have they just not learned that, or are they, maybe they know it but they're ignoring it? Where are they?
Yeah, I think they understand that there are certain guidelines, and they certainly, that would be their ideal, but I think they're also basically conceding that are they absolutely unattainable? I mean, that's what I'm saying, is the frustration within the church is breeding singles in a mindset that says, well, you know, this biblical ideal and biblical purity is a good notion, but how in the world is that even practical in the way our culture is playing out? If I'm not going to be married until I'm 30, are you saying I'm supposed to go through all my 20s without having sex? And that's what singles are saying. And I think I saw a study recently, Bill, that said that by the time a Christian single young adult reaches into their 30s, there are over 60% of them that will have been sexually active. And so, again, it's a numbers game that we're losing, and it is largely because we are enabling protracted singleness. We are preaching in the church to wait on marriage. I mean, I have been told, again, I can't tell you how many times, Bill, even in my own church where I'm told, you know, Lisa, oh, you know, I'm glad you did all this exciting stuff in your 20s. And while you're single, you can do all this traveling and you can go, you know, go and do amazing mission trips. And and at the same time, these singles are saying, well, I'd really love to just start a family. And can't you do missions trips as a family? And it's this idea that, oh, you're, you know, do all the living you can now, because then you're going to have to just be married and have these kids and drive a minivan. And it's a totally secular mindset that's seeped into the church.
Hmm. Wow. They don't paint a very positive view of marriage, do they? I'm guessing a lot of these are women talking to you. Are they not happy in their own marriages? Are they looking back saying, boy, I wish I had more fun when I was single? Why do they give you advice like that?
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. And I think that they, I think there's a lot of that in just understanding, you know, even as we talk to, if a single person casts a vision for loneliness or for just saying, you know, wow, you know, this is why God created marriage. This is a good thing to desire marriage. And you'll hear from the married people who are so lonely within their own marriages and, you know, think that their solution is to get out or to say, oh, I wish I would have done this or wish I had this instead. And, you know, I'll always hear from women, and this is like the common, you know, chant towards single women is, oh, you know, it's just better to be single and wishing you were married than married wishing you were single. And I mean, I just think we need to cast such a better script within the church for this, to show that marriage is a good thing and it's designed by God and it's meant for most people. And how do you move towards it successfully?
Mm-hmm. Wow. And let's take a quick break here, Lisa, take care of some business, and then we'll come back on the other side and we will look at some of the solutions to these problems. And there are solutions, and they're biblical solutions. And that's one of the things that Lisa and her colleagues at Focus on the Family try to impart every day through their website, focusonthefamily.com, and through the Boundless website and blog. We'll have more with our guest, Lisa Anderson, Director of Young Adults from Focus on the Family, in just a bit. If you've got a question for her, feel free to call 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH, here at Faith Radio. Be right back.
All this month, we've been asking listeners, why do you listen to Faith Radio? Jan wrote and said this, Faith Radio has become such a part of my everyday. I really miss it when we travel, which is about 5 months a year. However, recently I've learned how to get podcasts, and that's made a big difference. My favorite programs include Focus on the Family, Family Life Today, Living on the Edge, Revive Our Hearts, and Everyday Relationships, as well as Neil Stavem's informative noontime programs. Since we don't get a newspaper, it's an easy way to get the news, and we really appreciate the fact that it is more balanced than other media. I'd be lost if I couldn't listen to Faith Radio. Jan, thank you for taking the time to write and share your story and tell us why you listen to Faith Radio. If you'd like to share your story, please visit our website at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Thank you, and God bless you, and thank you for sharing.
Relax, celebrate, learn. It's a great way to spend the summer. Vacation for relaxation, fireworks for celebration, and University of Northwestern, St. Paul, for the learning. If you're a pre-K through 12th grade teacher, join us for the 2014 Summer Teacher Institute on June 18th. Network, gain new insights, work toward your license renewal, and earn continuing education credits.
You'll get a discount if you register by June 1st at unwsp.edu/teacher.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
And welcome back. We are so glad you joined us today. We have the entire broadcast scheduled for Faith Radio Weekends at myfaithradio.com. Just go to the schedule, click on Weekends, and check out what's coming up later today and tomorrow. And, of course, join us Monday through Friday for some of our incredible weekday programs, including, I think, my favorite, I have to admit, I'm kind of partial to my friend Neil Stavem's Connecting Faith, Monday through Friday from noon to 1, just really diving into Christianity and culture and worldview and apologetics and stuff that excites me. So if that's what you like, join Neil this coming Monday for Connecting Faith. My guest is Lisa Anderson. She is the Director of Young Adults at Focus on the Family. And before we go on, Lisa, I should mention that you have a major event coming up. The Boundless Pursuit 2014, which is August 7th through the 9th at the Focus on the Family campus in beautiful Colorado Springs. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what Pursuit is going to be?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it is our first ever weekend event sponsored by Boundless, Bill. And, you know, even in a church culture where there aren't too many things out there uniquely for single young adults, we decided that this was going to be something we made a commitment to. So August 7th through 9th, we're going to have hundreds of single adults, 18 to 39, from around the United States and even the world. We have five countries represented so far, to come to our Colorado Springs campus for a weekend of teaching. Great speakers are on the docket. We're going to have workshops. We're going to have fun free time activities. The Saturday morning of the event, we're going to do a citywide 5K run walk that we're inviting the public to. So that's going to be an opportunity for us to kind of take to the streets and something fun. So we're kind of calling it like part conference, part meetup, and part adventure, because we're right in the shadow of the Rocky Mountains. And so, in fact, I think I saw two women from Shakopee, Minnesota, register yesterday. We had someone from Fargo, so a lot of Faith Radio area people coming. And so you would not be alone if you're listening right now, or if you have a young adult child or grandchild who would benefit from this. Check out boundless.org/pursuit, and you can register through July 24th.
Okay, so your deadline's coming up a little more than a month away. Again, it's August 7th through the 9th. At Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs. If you've never been to Colorado Springs before, my friends, you've got to visit. It is just so incredible, so beautiful, and the people at Focus will treat you right. It's going to be a great experience. Lisa, we were discussing a variety of things regarding dating and marriage and Christian singles before the break, and I know we talked about a lot of the negatives because we have to acknowledge that there are a lot of negatives in today's culture, and a lot of people are being hurt because of that, because they're going outside of God's design for marriage and sexuality. And when you go outside of his design, often there are very painful consequences. So what is the biblical way for a Christian single to approach dating and marriage?
Yeah, I think, Bill, you know, and it's something, first of all, we have to recognize as single people that we serve a God who is both sovereign and he's good. I think so many singles look back, you know, on mistakes that they've made, just what you were saying, and said, well, I'm done, you know, forget it. I have to throw up my hands. I've made mistakes. There's no hope for me. And that's not true. God is still in the business of making good matches. He's still in the business of bringing beauty from ashes. He's still in the business of glorifying himself through godly marriages. And so we have to recognize that whatever the culture has dealt you, whatever your family history has dealt you, God still is crafting a story for you, that whether it includes a prolonged season of singleness like myself, or whether you're going to move into marriage this coming year, be encouraged that intentionality and godliness can truly craft a story that's good. So when I think practically what that means, I think there are a few things. I mean, singles who want to date well need to consider that, first of all, while you're in that season of waiting and while you're in that season of considering marriage, what are you working on in yourself? You know, there is a lot, I just said, we inherit a lot from our own stories, from our families, a lot of baggage you may have that you may need to, quite frankly, talk to a pastor about. You may need to get some counseling. You may need to confess some sin. You may need to work on some addictions. Are you in a position to marry, and are you moving towards healthiness in that realm, spiritually, emotionally, physically, all of that? Then singles need to recognize that dating is truly a pursuit. Proverbs 18:22, especially for men, says, "He who finds a wife finds what is good and finds favor with the Lord." Find is an active verb. So this idea that we're going to sit on our hands and just hang out with people and somehow that's miraculously going to turn into a marriage, maybe it did in my, you know, in our grandparents' generation. It just seems like marriage, like my mom, you know, when she says, she's like, Lisa, this was easy, you know, why is this so hard for you? I just met your dad and we got married. That is no longer the case. It has to be, you have to go about it with biblical intention. And so that involves searching out a spouse, just as you would. You know, we put so much emphasis on finding a job or finding an apartment, and yet when it comes to finding a lifelong marriage partner, we treat it like it's just some plan B or C that's going to haphazardly happen. And then finally, you have to get the accountability and the structure around you to know that you're making good decisions. When people start dating, they just tend to throw, and I was in this camp as well and have been as I've dated. Praise God, I've matured some in recent years, but we throw objectivity out the window. Either we feel like this person that we're dating is our only hope, and so we're going to have to make this work, or we are so enthralled with them that we overlook all red flags and just, you know, dive headlong into something. You need godly people in your life, mentors, whether that is a good dad and mom, like we talked about earlier, Bill, or people within your church to get on board with you, to help you make good decisions, to help evaluate potential mates. And quite frankly, I encourage people to pick three people in your life that you know and you trust, and they have veto power over anyone you date. If they say, if three people agree that this person is not a good fit for you, if they are toxic, if they are just, you know, have growing up to do or whatever, then they say the word and you cut it off. Too many singles go into relationships and move towards marriage when they have no business doing so. And so you have to have structures in place.
Wow. Have you actually seen that happen where you've known Christian men or women who have had that sort of cadre of mentors around them and have listened to that advice?
I have actually had I've seen it not in that specific structure, but I've seen people who I have a friend who basically did not employ that in her life. We had encouraged her to do that because we knew that she had met a guy online. Long story short, she married him, and within a year, he had cheated on her, and their marriage ended in divorce. And she acknowledges that basically once she decided she was going to marry this guy, she shut everyone out. And those of us that were talking to her, she had just was not willing to hear what we had to say. And so she even said, as I talked with her about that, I said, would you have, if you had given three people authority in this, would you have listened to them? Deciding ahead of time that you would do this. And she said, I don't think I would have done it then. I'm absolutely going to do it now. Mm. And so she has kind of put that in place, knowing, learning from her mistakes. And so, Bill, it's necessary. I mean, it's especially when we have opened up the world of online dating where we don't know about people as much. We're not in close community circles within churches where people can, you know, give references for people, for crying out loud, and really vouch for their character. And so we have to be a lot more careful in that realm.
Hmm. We just got about a minute and a half left. Just briefly tell me, what type of qualities do you think a single Christian should be looking for in a potential mate?
Sure. I would say the top things they need to look for, first of all, and it's a very short list, actually. You want a person who acknowledges the name of Jesus Christ. They describe themselves as a believer, a follower of Jesus. But you don't just want that. They need to be growing in their faith. Are they legitimate? Do they have people who can vouch for their character? Are they humble? Are they teachable? Are they have they grown up? So, you know, women looking at guys, does this guy have a job? Is he in a position to protect and provide? And then finally, are they on a path towards maturity in that they know how to communicate, they're learning how to deal with conflict, and they're willing to invite others into their lives as that mirror to really help them grow up and move on and be great husbands and wives?
Wow, that is some great advice, and I'm guessing you can find that on the boundless.org website as well, and if not, you better post it there, Lisa.
Absolutely.
That's a great, great summary of what Christian singles should be pursuing, and we want to mention once again the Pursuit Conference coming up in Colorado Springs. If you are a Christian single between 18 and, I think you said, 39, August 7th through the 9th, you can find out more at boundless.org/pursuit. Lisa Anderson, thank you so much for your time today. May the Lord continue to guide you and direct you in your ministry there. We appreciate you so much.
Thank you, Bill. Always great to talk to you.
All right. Our friend Lisa Anderson, who, by the way, is from Minnesota. I should have mentioned that at the beginning of the program. And we will talk to you next week, next Saturday morning at 11 a.m. or our Sunday repeat broadcast. Have a wonderful weekend. And thanks for making Faith Radio a part of it.